Welcome to the Meal Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. This is the 19th episode in the Co-Pilot series where we can chat about making the plant-based lifestyle more doable, especially while facing the common challenges and roadblocks we all face on our journey to better health and weight loss. Today's guest is one of our Meal Mentor members, and I'm really excited because she has a very different perspective than almost any other guest that's ever been on the show. She's coming from a different place, and I really love sort of the parallel and the just the different view and to see how we really are all coming from a different place, but we kind of have the same endpoint. We're all racing to the same finish, this finish of happiness and health and kind of perseverance. And she's just the embodiment of all these things. So please give me a huge hand in welcoming MJ. Hi, MJ.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. So one of the big things that you and I chatted about before was most of the people who joined me on the podcast have been overweight, or they've struggled with their weight all their life, or one of the reasons that they, you know, started a plant-based diet was to lose weight. But you, that was not you at all. You actually were the reverse. You were so thin that you kind of got picked on for it. So maybe you can sort of tell us about that.
Well, I was always small, short, and skinny, and scrawny, and growing up I was always teased and called the Cambodian refugee or the Ethiopian refugee. But skinny doesn't always mean healthy either.
And
as I got older and into adulthood, my family history and genetics and all that made me decide that, you know, I needed to watch a little bit better. Even though I could eat anything I wanted, doesn't mean I should eat anything I wanted. So,
yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing I try to tell people all the time, that healthy comes in all shapes and sizes. And like you said, skinny doesn't mean healthy. And I have a girlfriend who, I mean, even soaking wet, she could never weigh more than probably 90 or 100 pounds. And her diet is absolutely terrible. And she's at risk for diabetes. And you just, I mean, when you look at her, you wouldn't think that, but she's so unhealthy and she has all these chronic health problems, even though she's very thin.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything. I had actually a little bit of an issue with my cholesterol that runs in the family. And even though I was skinny, I would eat all the fried foods and, you know, I loved steak right up until I was about 20 and, you know, would just eat it. It was abandoned, you know.
Just. Right.
But then I realized as I got through college that I needed to watch those things because my dad had a heart attack when he was 41.
Which is extremely young.
Yes, yes. So, and I was like, okay, those are partly my genes. And just because I'm skinny, maybe I need to pay attention to some other things besides just my body, really.
Right, absolutely. It's such a testament that, you know, your weight doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, you could still, like you said, you could be skinny and you can still be unhealthy. And there are professional athletes. I mean, professional athletes, we're talking super muscular, fit people who work out tons more hours than any of us. And they have heart attacks and die every year. And it's, again, going back to diet and genetics.
Right.
I mean, it's very sad, but I mean, they're professional athletes. Obviously, they're healthy in some respects, but, you know, bad diet, you just can't exercise that off.
No.
So another thing that I love about you, again, is most people who find their way to a plant-based diet often do so for, you know, it's a vanity thing or it's an animal rights thing or it's a health thing. Like you said, maybe they have heart disease or cholesterol or they need to lose weight. Most commonly, they need to lose weight. That's a big chunk of our members. But you, it was kind of an experiment based on some education, which is completely different than what most people do. So maybe you can tell us what led you to being a vegetarian.
When I was in college, I studied biochemistry. And one of my nutrition classes, we had to do a semester-long thesis-type paper on any kind of dietary change that could affect your health. So I chose to go vegetarian for the semester. And I did, and I never went back to eating meat again. I was 20 years old. I felt so much better by not eating meat that I just never went back to it again. And it's been, well, I'll be 53 in July, so it's been 30. I'm not a mathematician.
It's been a long time. We'll just go with that.
I didn't go vegan. I just stopped meat. And I stopped dairy until about a year ago.
And so you So, I mean, it's extremely young. I mean, you, like you said, you were 20, which is very young to be a vegetarian. And you since, you know, met someone, got married, had children. So how did that all go in terms of being a vegetarian and getting married and having this husband and then, of course, having children? And you have grandchildren now too, right?
Yes, yes, I have two. Yes, my husband, of course, was a carnivore. He was a Marine and he was, you know, the big, beefy, I've got to have meat and potatoes guy. And I just ate what I ate and added a side of meat for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was not picky. He would eat anything. So whatever I made for a dish for myself that evening, if I had tossed some shrimp in it or, you know, a side of beef or some chicken, then he was totally fine with it. And then our first child, he was raised on it because he was daddy's boy after his father. But then my daughter, there's 13 years between my daughter and my son, and she's only 15 now, but I raised her veg because it was basically just she and I for ever since she was born because he was gone a lot. And so she's been raised vegetarian. And recently, yes, she has actually recently given up cheese to see if it would help her acne. So we will see what happens with that.
Yeah, dairy was a big thing for me with my acne, and I struggled and was so embarrassed all through my teen years having this horrible acne, and I just wish somebody would have told me to not eat dairy, so I really hope it works for her. But it definitely, getting rid of dairy really helped with my skin a lot. But one of the things I love that you said is that you were a vegetarian, but your husband was not, and so what you did was you made your vegetarian meal, and then you just added meat to his portion, and that's what a lot of people do with the meal plans, is they make it, and then they add meat or cheese for their family's portion, and it works so well, and I think it's just a simple solution that a lot of people don't think about.
Exactly. I mean, I did not become vegetarian for ethical reasons, so it doesn't bother me to cook meat mm-hmm. or have it in my house or, you know, to incorporate it into meals for other people. So I think maybe people who are ethical vegetarians have an issue with that, but that's not how I started. It's a great side effect of becoming mm-hmm. vegetarian, but I don't mind cooking it for others. So it works out well.
So one thing that I love that you were telling me when you were raising your kids is that your kids, even when they were 9 months old, they were eating like vegetable stir fries and what a lot of people would consider adult food and not, you know, quote unquote kid food. And I hear that all the time. Oh, kids are given hot dogs and chicken nuggets. But then I also have friends whose kids eat tofu or sushi. And so I know that was sort of how your kids were raised as they ate more adult fare.
Yes. And it's always been a pet peeve of mine. All my friends' kids are picky, 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 picky. And it's always been a pet peeve. Well, that's not a kid's food. I'm like, all food is kids' food.
Right.
Are your kids from another planet? Because, you know, my kids just eat all food. But I have one friend who won't eat anything that's green.
Oh, my goodness.
That's just her basis. I won't eat anything that's green. And so her kids, of course, don't eat anything that's green. You know, and it just, yeah, it kind of drives me crazy. Because kids, I mean, I understand when there are issues with texture or allergies, of course. But other than that, let your kids try the food.
Right.
Don't assume they won't like it. My daughter has loved curries ever since she was a year old.
That's amazing.
You know, curry is one of her favorite spices. And everyone's like, you give your kid curry? I'm like, why wouldn't I?
Well, little boys and girls in India eat curry.
Yeah. If she spits it out and doesn't like it, then okay, we'll try again in another month. But, you know, I'm not gonna feed her, you know, whole chipotle peppers out of the can. You know, that
right.
might hurt her a little bit. But so, yes, that's one of my pet peeves when people say it's not kids' food.
And it's an interesting thing that you said about your friend. Your friend didn't eat green foods, and now her kids don't eat green foods. And that's definitely something I've seen working with a lot of families is that kids really do mimic their parents, even if you think that they're trying to be, you know, opposite of you and be rebellious or something. But there is definitely a period where they're learning from your behaviors. And that was certainly true for me. There was all these foods that I had never eaten. And I think it was because my parents didn't like them or they just assumed I wouldn't like them. And then, of course, because they were never in my life, I thought they were weird or I thought that I didn't like them. I mean, I spent my whole life thinking I didn't like onions. And I mean, I didn't love them the first time I tried them, but I really like them now. And that's another thing, too, is like you said, you have to let them try it. And for me, I love to famously say, when I showed up for college, I did not like coffee or beer. And amazingly, 4 years later, I left liking both.
So I never acquired a taste for coffee. But I know what you mean, because I grew up, my mother always hated mushrooms.
Yeah, so, mushrooms is one for me too.
Yeah, we never ate them. And I always swore I hated mushrooms. And I had never really had one except for maybe a slimy one on a pizza, you know, growing up. But when I was in college, I worked at a very upscale restaurant. And they would saute fresh mushrooms that weren't slimy and soft with, like, wine and a butter sauce. And before I went vegetarian, those were really good. So I finally learned to try different things, you know, as far as mushrooms go.
Right.
Yes, you know, I think kids very much eat by example. You know, my daughter won't eat olives because I have never eaten olives and I don't keep them in the house because that's one food that I detest. And just because I don't like them doesn't mean you won't try one, but she won't. So, you know, because she's never seen me eat one, but...
Yeah, it's funny because it's also, it's just so funny how these things influence us, even with our families. Like, my family is Italian, and so they proudly eat a ton of Italian dishes and a ton of pasta and stuff like that. But my husband's family, they're not Italian, and it's not that they never ate Italian food, but they didn't eat it quite so much and with such emotional enthusiasm. And so, like, it's very interesting when I make something like lasagna or pasta to just see how it's different between the two of us eating this meal and our kind of enjoyment and excitement about it. Because mine's like so much more over the top than his. And I think it's because of all that, as you said, which I love this, eat by example.
Right. And I think eating is a very, it's very social and emotional, and it's very steeped in traditions too. My mother gets very offended. I've been a vegetarian for 30 plus years, and she's still offended when I won't eat her German red cabbage because it has bacon in it. And I'm like, Mom, you know I won't eat it, but it's part of every Christmas celebration. And it's part of every Easter celebration. And it's been at our table for the 53 years I've been alive.
Right, right.
And she still will ask me, aren't you going to eat the red cabbage? I'm like, no, Mom.
No, not this year either. Try again next.
But for her, it's a tradition. She was born in Germany and came over here when she was young. It's like a steeped in tradition for her to eat that on holidays. But
right.
It's funny.
Yeah, my family eats, on Christmas Eve, they eat fish sticks and macaroni and cheese. I have no idea where this came from. I know it's because they're Catholic and it has to do with some Catholic practices, but still, I don't know why specifically macaroni and cheese and fish sticks. And they've been doing this long before I was alive. I mean, it goes back so far that my family has done this. And every year, you know, it's just kind of these looks and I'm like, nope, not this year either. Now that so many of us are plant-based, my parents and my sister and stuff, I make vegan versions, but there was a long period where everyone just kind of looked at me and it was like, what? I'm like, I'm good. I'm just going to eat salad. You can't eat salad on Christmas Eve. And I'm like, I'm fine.
I'll make red cabbage without the bacon. I make it exactly the same way.
Right.
I make bacon. It's totally plant-based. Just, you know. It's
exactly, and I love that. There's always a plant-based version that you can do. And it was funny, the first year my parents were plant-based, we weren't together for Thanksgiving, and I was kind of worried about them sort of fending for their own around our family. But they were fine, and my mom's like, I think everyone else was more emotional about the fact that I wasn't eating turkey than I was. Like, they were like, I just feel so bad for you. And my mom's like, I don't feel bad for me.
Yeah. Good for her.
So, but yeah, you're right. It's definitely like these deep, deep traditions, but a good way to get around it is, like you said, you just make the red cabbage, but without the bacon. And you can use a vegan meat bacon substitute if you really want it, but I'm sure it's fine without it too.
Yeah. Yeah. It just adds that, what it is it adds a little bit of fat to it.
Yeah. I can see it. So it's a little more palatable.
Yeah.
And smoke, maybe some smoky element.
You know, it's funny though, out of all the meats in the world, bacon, every time I smell it, I'm like, oh, that smells good.
You know, it's funny, I was reading this article by this just this journalist who'd been vegetarian for a long time, and he's like, and I'm vegetarian, and yet I still like the smell of bacon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
He's like, I don't want to eat it, but I think it smells good. And it's like, I think it's, we're like programmed biologically or something to like want the palatable smell or something. It's because it's so high fat and salty. So it's just like sending off all those pleasure traps in our brain.
Yeah, but enough
about bacon, which by the way, I find some smoked paprika and liquid smoke and a drop of maple really recreates that flavor in anything. But one thing that you said was that you have been meat-free, vegetarian for 30 plus years, but you only recently gave up other animal products like dairy and eggs about a year ago. What made you make that jump after 30 some years?
Well, even though I haven't worked in the scientific field for quite a few years, I always still follow a lot of the studies and whatnot. And the more and more I've been reading about dairy, it was making more and more sense to me that it really wasn't good for me. And I had already cut out milk pretty much because I just didn't like the taste of it anymore. And I was never a huge cheese person, but I do like certain kinds, like, you know, on pizza and what have you. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to give it up and see what happens. And I'll tell you, even just in the first couple of weeks, my digestion, I wasn't belching as much, that type of thing. And I felt, my stomach felt so much better. I'm bloating all the time, you know, instead of being bloated all the time.
Right.
And like I've seen so many people mention on the message boards, when they slip and eat cheese, they're reminded quickly of why they stop.
Yeah.
It just makes them feel so miserable. So, and my daughter's finding that actually. She's been about 3 weeks without having any cheese, and she was a cheese hound. She loved cheese. And I noticed she has stopped complaining that her belly hurts as much as she used to. So,
yeah, it's funny how, we have member forums and people are always commenting, and it seems that people almost never slip up or revert or cave with meat. It's often cheese. And I understand why, because so many people are literally cheese addicts. They're cheese fanatics. And it's because the casein makes you physically addicted. So part of it, you can't even help yourself. You're just so
right.
So it is, like you said, most people, when they slip up, it is usually with some form of a cheese product, whether it's cream cheese or actual cheese or something, or it's dairy, maybe it's ice cream. And it's amazing how they all say, oh my God, I feel terrible.
Yep.
And it's never just like, oh, I feel a little gross. They like really describe like really bad symptoms. And it's like, yeah, that body is just affirming to you that this is toxic.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just, I remember I accidentally had a muffin. My friend, I feel so bad even sharing the story, but she was really trying to make me a vegan muffin, and she remembered to like not make the eggs, and she remembered to use soy milk, and she's like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me to use margarine, but she used butter.
Oh, right.
And but she had forgot, like she even meant to use margarine, but she just, you know, went into like her autopilot and whatever. And then it wasn't until like I ate the muffin in like a few minutes, you know, like 30 minutes later, I was like, oh my God, my stomach's cramping really bad. I need to find a bathroom. It occurred to my friend. She's like, oh my God, you know, but so it was like this complete accidental inadvertent thing, but it was, and I'm thinking to myself, I asked her how much butter she used in all of the muffins, and I'm thinking it had to be like a tablespoon or less of butter in the muffin I ate. It could not have been much, and it made me so sick. Like, my stomach hurt so bad, and that was my thing, and I always remembered that after that. Like, I don't want to cheat. Remember how bad it was with that muffin?
No, yeah, it is. It's horrible. And like with yogurt, you know, it's not a big deal because there are so many yogurt substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went from eating dairy yogurt to almond milk or coconut milk yogurt. But it's the cheese for everyone. My sister is a cheese addict, and she's like, I could never eat the way you do because I just can't give up cheese.
That's what I hear all the time. It's always the cheese.
Yep.
So I often tell people, if there's one thing you can do, if there's only one, it's to give up cheese. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. You know, dairy is linked to so many different problems and symptoms that people have, for one. But two, I often find cheese is the hardest. So just, you know, give it up. And a lot of people, they suddenly don't want the taco if they can't have cheese with it, or they don't want the pizza. It wasn't really about the pepperoni. It was about the cheese. And so it is really interesting when people
Right.
I had to do that.
Since it's been about a year since I gave up the cheese, my cholesterol, which was low anyway, has gone down even more.
Oh, wow.
And that's the only thing I've changed in my diet in 30 years. We never really ate. I've always liked to cook, so we never ate many processed foods to begin with. But the cheese is pretty much the only thing that's changed. So there you go.
And I could see that. I could see how just removing cheese and dairy products could really cause a drop.
Well, I think cheese is probably one of the highest things in cholesterol, really.
Right, exactly.
Outside of a side of beef.
Oh, my goodness. So what made you make the switch? Was it because your cholesterol was higher than you'd like? I know you mentioned your dad had a heart attack. Was there kind of motivating reason?
Really, the reason is because I'm getting old.
Okay. 53 is so young. Don't say that.
There are very few days that I feel my age. But, you know, I am beyond middle-aged. I'm almost 53 here. And as I get older, the aches and pains start, you know, they do creep up a little bit more no matter how active I am. And I just wanted that final push to really clean up my whole diet all the way around as I get into my more elder years to hopefully, you know, stave off the normal things that happen with aging, but maybe so that I'm not quite as in much pain and even just the things, you know, maybe it will help prevent me from getting that cancer in 10 years or, you know, as a preventative thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I had, you know, a few pounds several years ago that creeped on. And so I started to watch what I was eating, not the junk food, but I had a sweet tooth. So this has helped to cut out the sweet tooth also.
Have you found that like your cravings for sweets have dwindled?
For the most part, yes. Yeah. There are occasions now. The other night, my daughter and I were both sitting here at 8:30 at night and we both looked at each other and she's like, I need chocolate. I said, I need food. Just out of the blue. We were watching some TV show and we just looked at each other and was like, I want chocolate. So I found some vegan chocolate chips in the back of the cupboard and I was like, here we go.
Yeah. There we go.
Other than that, yes, I don't crave the cookies. I was a cookie monster. Mm-hmm. If there were cookies around, they were in my mouth.
That was how I was. I could not resist. I remember even when I was a vegetarian, I couldn't resist like the candy bar in the checkout lane. I couldn't walk past the bakery. And now it's like when I decided I wasn't going to eat those things anymore, I got added strength or something. It's like, okay, I'm not going to eat that anymore. So I couldn't do it before, but now I can. But I also think, like you said, not eating it really helped with like the sweet tooth and the cravings. And I love a good piece of chocolate still, but it's not like you said where, oh my God, I need to have cookies.
Right. Yeah. And now the chocolate that I do eat is usually a 90% cacao instead of milk chocolate, obviously.
Right. So, and it's almost not bitter, but it's not as super sweet as like milk chocolate is. Yeah.
My daughter even prefers the really dark chocolate.
Wow.
Which is kind of, my mother always ate dark chocolate too. So we were brought up that way, but yeah, I don't crave the sweets. And for me, everything is all or nothing. I cannot phase things out. I have to cut it out or eat it. You know, there's no phasing things out. I'm an all or nothing kind of person.
I really appreciate you saying that because a lot of people, you know, they want to take baby steps. And I do think like having a phasing system or a long transition might work for some people, but I'm the same as you. It's like, I got to rip the Band-Aid off. I have to do it all or nothing. If I really want to be successful at anything, not just when I was changing my diet, but there's things in my life, I just have to, it's zero or none, I guess.
Yeah. Same here. If I try to wean myself off anything, if the temptation is there, I'll be tempted.
Mm-hmm.
So really it's kind of a lack of willpower that I am all or nothing. I have to be all or nothing because I don't have as much willpower in a roundabout way when you think about it. So people always say to me, oh, you have such good willpower. It's like, well, not really.
I recognize I can't have the temptation. I'm all or nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an interesting way to look at it, yeah, because the people say that too, oh, you're so strong, and then I'm like, well, I just know myself well enough to know that I don't have the strength to not do it, so I guess I'm strong and knowing I don't have the strength. It's very philosophical.
Right, yeah, yeah. That's funny.
So what...
trick our brains.
Yeah. So one interesting thing also about you, in addition to that you came to vegetarian in a different way and you were always very thin, is that you work in a field where you kind of get a different bird's eye view to sort of the current health climate, and maybe you can talk about that.
Yes, I work as a quality assurance manager for a medical transcription, I don't want to say company, it's the medical transcription department for all the pretty much all the hospitals in the state of Maine. So I'm constantly reading medical reports for everything, for the cancer center, for the GI clinics, for everything, the gastric bypass clinic. And so I see day in and day out, I'm reading about real life instances of things, of all the things that you can get.
Right.
Basically, and every day as I'm sitting there reading, I'm like, oh, I don't want that. I don't want that. I really don't want that one. So yes, it does. It makes me think and reinforces my desire to keep up my lifestyle because, you know, my mother's had cancer 3 times.
Oh my goodness.
And it's not that, and you know, it's funny, my parents actually are almost 80 and they are very healthy for their age, even though my dad had a heart attack so young. But yes, reading all these reports just makes me, you know, it validates what I want to do and reinforces what I want to do. So, and it makes me wonder how so many people even survive as long as they do sometimes.
I know, yeah. And that's one of the things that I often say when I give lectures publicly is that we're living longer, but we're sicker. And so we're not really living because it's, you know, we have all this technology now to keep us alive, like just barely not dead, but we're not really having a good quality of life. It's
right.
Amazing how long, like you said, people can live with these really unfortunate health issues, you know, like, you know, cancer, heart disease, or, and the surgeries that they have to go through is just, it's so mind blowing to me. Like I still can't believe. I love Dr. Esselstyn when he says, you know, to get a quadruple bypass, they crack open your chest, they literally cut down your breastbone and like take your heart out of your body and like sew it and do all these things. Most people would consider that extreme, and yet dietary change is considered extreme.
Yes, exactly. And I read these surgical reports day in and day out, and I'm like, ugh, the only surgery I've ever had is wisdom teeth, and I had my tonsils taken out. You know, and the only medication I take is an occasional ibuprofen for days when I've overdone it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I'll read reports of people much younger than me who are on lists full of medications and, you know, prescriptions and have had multiple surgeries already. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm not so bad off.
Right. Yeah, I'm amazed. I had to pick up some when I actually had my wisdom teeth out too. I had a bunch of dental surgeries because I have a botched dental job, basically, is I was fitted with a bad crown and it went untreated and I ended up having like all this problem with my bone and got a bone transplant and all these fun things. But anyway, during one of the surgeries, they forced me to take antibiotics. And so I went to the store to go pick up the antibiotics, and there was a person in front of me who could not have been more than 5 years older than me, just couldn't have been, and I'm not joking, picked up 9 prescriptions. And I'm thinking to myself, I felt awful. I was like, what's wrong with this person? But it was just shocking to me how many people were picking up multiple prescriptions while I was waiting in line to pick up my antibiotics. And I was like, we are really over-medicated.
Yes, we are. Yeah, I see the lists every day, and it's like, wow. And then come out with new ones every day for...
Oh, yeah. And I have a friend that's a patent attorney, and the only work for patent attorneys these days is in the pharmaceutical industry, and she happens to be vegan, and she's like, I kind of feel like a traitor, but at the same time, like, that's the only work she can get. And she's like, but at the same time, it's like, it blows my mind how much of an industry this is, and no one really knows about it unless they work in it.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge industry.
We were having one of our weekly support chats yesterday, and someone who works in the pharmaceutical industry was saying that it's shocking how often even doctors will push back or change or reschedule seeing a patient because they have to meet with a pharmaceutical rep, and they meet with the pharmaceutical rep because that's a huge revenue for them. And I was like, what? Oh my gosh, I had no idea.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, that is true. I do have to say kudos to my doctor, though, because when I had my physical a few weeks ago, she asked me what I was doing different when she saw my cholesterol, and I said I went totally, and I didn't call it vegan, I said plant-based, and she said, congratulations. She said, I totally agree with you.
Oh, that's awesome.
She said that she's been shifting her family more towards a plant-based diet, too. And
that's amazing.
So I was quite surprised, actually, because I'm in Maine, and everyone always thinks it's a backwards place, and in some ways it is, because people just don't, their opinions don't evolve.
Yeah.
And I don't know anyone else who's even a vegetarian, so much more plant-based, you know, than I've ever come across in Maine, so it can be difficult, but we're getting a little bit better, I hope, so.
Well, in Portland, Maine's pretty progressive. When I was there, I actually found a lot of vegetarian fare and was really impressed, but I definitely, when I was staying farther away in more of a rural part of Maine, it was like a town of 400, it's definitely, it was kind of like the side eye, what, you do what?
Yeah. I live up in the central Maine area, and there are more, restaurants are much more willing to work with you now.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever been out to a place where there was another person who ate the same way I did. You know, everyone, and all my friends, everyone that knows me over the years knows that that's the way I am. And they, you know, it doesn't affect them, but yeah, it's just funny because I've never walked into an establishment and had someone say, oh yeah, I want that too. Or, you know, I want mine cooked that way. Yeah, doesn't happen.
And a lot of people, especially our members when they're new, they feel really weird about being different, you know, about having to have that experience. Do you have any advice for them for how they can feel more confident or sure of themselves when they're being so different and maybe being in this place where it's so totally foreign to everyone else what you're doing?
Boy, I don't know if I have advice so much. I've always been a very independent, strong-minded person myself.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can say is that you really have to not let what others think bother you. And I know that's easier said than done. I think that the more you stick with it and the more you deal with it, each time you, I don't want to say confront, what's the word I want, each time you discuss it with someone or someone asks you a question and you're able to state why or what it is that you're doing, that you get more confident each time that you have to explain it. But then there's also, you don't have to explain yourself. You know, it's you, your body, your life, and what you want to do with your life and your body is your business and not anyone else's when you get right down to it. But as I said, people get so, it's, eating habits are so ingrained in people, and it's such a social thing and a cultural thing that people get really offended sometimes, and you just need to be able to walk away, I guess. Don't engage. I don't engage with my sister. My sister thinks I'm a nutcase since I went vegetarian 30 years ago, and we just agreed to not discuss it because, you know, that's the one hot topic with the two of us, and you just have to be able to turn the other cheek, I guess, and walk away when it gets, you know, volatile.
It's funny you just brought that up because that was going to be my closing question or closing topic to talk about with you is that you told me that your sister has some health issues and it makes you really sad that she kind of won't help herself. She won't change, but she's so extremely defensive no matter what, just in your presence, that you just can't even talk about it. Just for the sake of your relationship and so you can have a good relationship with your sister. And I know a lot of people feel that way, and I do. My extended family, you know, they're morbidly obese. They are on a billion medications. Like, they line them up on the table every morning, and I've sat there and been like, I can help you get off all those, and they just don't want to listen. Or even me, I don't have to say anything. I don't even have to open my mouth, and they're immediately on the defensive. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. So maybe you can sort of share your experience so others can see they're not alone.
Yes. My sister, who is younger than I am, she was the opposite of me, where I was always skinny, scrawny. She was always the huskier build. And she was always a lot taller than me, too. But she's been overweight her whole life, and now she's morbidly obese, and she has Crohn's disease. And I've tried to explain to her that maybe giving up even just the dairy might help with the Crohn's, because it's such a digestive... Crohn's is not an immune disease that affects your digestive tract immensely. I mean, she could... One day she might be fine, the next day she needs to be no more than 10 feet from a bathroom all day long. She will eat a few vegetables, but she will not change the way she eats at all. And she gets so defensive anytime I even would try to talk to her about it, out of concern.
Mm-hmm.
And I just learned over the years that I just to leave it alone, and I try to lead by example, you know, and I will say she does feed her children well. She has two kids younger than mine, and she is very big on making sure they eat fruits and vegetables and all that, but she just won't help herself, and I don't know what to do about her anymore, so I just, for the sake of our friendship, she, you know, is my sister, and I love her, and I want to be able to talk to her every day and not have her mad at me, so I've just learned to keep it to myself and lead by example, and maybe someday she'll turn around, but...
And that's it. You can just keep leading by example and hold out the hope. But it's definitely, I think, something that's frustrating for a lot of people. I know it is for my family. And my parents feel the same way as I do. And they're like, at this point, I just have to concentrate on myself and my health and the health of us and hope and pray that one day they change.
Right. You can only take care of yourself.
Right.
You know, as women, we want to take care of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get down to it, you can only take care of yourself and do the best that you can. Really, that's all you can ask of yourself.
And that's such a great point.
Stress yourself out, and then that's not healthy for you either. So,
yes, and that's the point that I do try to also on this podcast hope people pick up is that, you know, healthcare is self-care, and you are no good to anyone. You can't be a good wife, a good mother, a good sister, a good friend, a good employee. You can be nothing if you're not well.
Right. Yep.
And so
I just always think of my kids too, and my grandkids. I want to be here in the next 20 years and be able to actually participate in their lives instead of just sitting around in pain or, you know, not being able to do anything with them.
It's funny. That was when my father had his heart attack that made my parents go plant-based, is that's what everyone was saying when they were trying to help convince my dad to make a dietary change. They're like, you want to be around for the next 20 years to, you know, see your daughter do this or your grandchildren do that. And it's a very powerful thing to think about is, one, I want to be here, but I also want to be here to enjoy them and be present in their lives or in my life with them in it.
Right. Yep.
Well, it has been wonderful having you on the podcast, and you gave such great insight and a nice new viewpoint that we haven't had on the podcast before. And I really also appreciated a lot of the tips you said, especially about, I think I'm going to steal this slogan of eat by example, because it's so good. I'm going to start handing it out to all of the moms and be like, eat by example. And the dads too, because sometimes a lot of our members, our lady members, will say, like, I try so hard to be a good example for my kids, and then my husband takes them out for McDonald's, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. Or sometimes it's their parents. It's the grandparents giving them the garbage.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, man, it's just – we have such a struggle with being a good example.
Yeah, just every bite you put in your mouth is an example.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you want to learn more about the meal plans, you can visit getmealplans.com. And, of course, you can interact with me and MJ if you're a member in all of the forums and the Facebook group. And, again, thanks so much for having you – oh, no, that's not working. Thanks again so much for being on the podcast. It was great having you today, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.